For the best breakfast this side of Lake Michigan, come on down to Joe Cam's Pancake House, right in the heart of Milwaukee. Biscuits and gravy for miles, deep pocket buttered waffles, and all the pancakes you can guzzle down. Serving breakfast all day, 7 days a week.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. It is another reviews episode. We're going to have a lot of games to talk about. But before all that, last episode was a Wrestlecast, and we talked wrestling, and wrestling happened. And now it's time to go over what happened in wrestling. And Tim Akibis is here once again. Tim, how are you doing?
Conveniently enough. Hey, I'm good. I am quite well.
You are quite well.
Fine day. Yes. Oh, yeah, the wrestling happened this past weekend. Worlds Collide, that was Saturday night, and that was awesome. That show was awesome.
Really good.
That was a hell of a damn show. That was holy poop. There were some great matches on there. I guess a somewhat surprising title change, the Cruiserweight Championship leaving Angel Garza and going to Jordan Devlin.
Yeah, you convinced me to watch that match, and Garza ended up losing.
Garza ended up losing, but it was good. They had some good spots in that match. That was fun. The only match that was kind of was like the women's title match. I did not watch the kickoff show match. I just skipped that. Sorry. but yeah, the tag match, the DIY Mustache Mountain match was incredible.
Oh, man, that was so good.
Yeah, the main event, the just fucking Walter just destroying the Undisputed Era.
How about Alexander Wolf getting kicked to hell?
Yeah, that's his fault. the problem was he tucked his chin down to his chest being where Bobby Fish was going to kick him.
Yep.
If he just kept his chin up, he would have been fine, but he tucked his chin, got kicked right in it, and out he went.
Oh, he got knocked the fuck out.
Goodbye. Poor guy. Like, he got ripped up in the War Games match a couple years ago, got knocked out of this match, which I don't know, kind of worked in the match's favor, I guess, a little bit, that it gave Imperium, these big imposing guys, kind of a scrappy underdog position, little bit, but
and they ended up pulling out the win.
Yeah, just by force of Walter, it felt like that dude just would not go down. And was very popular in that arena as well.
I'm excited also because we had the same picks for TakeOver. And yeah. We went 5-for-6 on our picks. Yeah,
only missed on that Cruiserweight match.
You keep calling it TakeOver. Worlds Collide.
Whatever. I mean,
close enough.
same spirit of, like, we're going to have awesome matches, like, top to bottom. You know, whether it ultimately had consequence or not. There was enough consequence on there. Finn Balor about to be getting into fights with a big strong boy, Tyler Bate. That should also be a very good match. Yeah. So yeah, it was a great show. That was, just those two tag matches were just so, so damn good.
Yeah, it was a hell of a night. And then the Royal Rumble did not disappoint at all. I thought it was a great event.
I don't know.
Event.
It did disappoint at one moment in particular, but like...
Which one? What the brought one where, you down?
The one where Charlotte won.
No. Yeah, I was really hoping Baszler would win it, and apparently that was the original plan, was for Baszler to win it, but...
That was definitely frustrating to me. So yeah, my picks to win the respective Rumbles were Shayna Baszler and Roman Reigns, and apparently that was, as the rumors trickled out, that was the original plan, which they recently changed. So I was right until they changed their fucking minds, and they ended up going with the safe pick, throwing up the air quotes pick for the Women's Royal Rumble and the fresher pick for the men's Royal Rumble, and I had those picks reversed. But man, Drew Mac, holy shit.
Yeah, Drew McIntyre getting the win, surprisingly enough, over Roman Reigns and the returning Edge.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I kind of expected it, but it still just blew my socks off.
Yeah. I mean, ever since Edge kind of came out and hit that spear at, back at SummerSlam, I think a lot of people have been like, is he okay? They're like, is he okay? Wait a second. Is he okay? Is he okay to do this all of a sudden? Is he gonna, well, maybe he just hit a spear and that's it. I don't know. So, you know, but then you start to hear, you know, you hear the rumors. You hear the rumors that he's coming rumblings. Back. But you don't know until it happens. And then it happens. And the camera work is really bad. Camera work was so, so bad. But, you know.
First spear back in 9 years. Let's cut to some guy in the crowd instead.
Yeah, I mean, like, the whole thing. Like, the first, like, from his music hits for, like, the next, like, 20 seconds, there is like a half a second of Edge on camera. All the rest is Kevin Dunn trying to catch memeable crowd reaction spots. And it's just so frustrating, dude. It's just like, you know, it was another one of those moments where they, up on the WWE YouTube, they had to put up the unseen footage of the of Edge's return, which was basically like, you know, the angles that they should have used on the show, but did not use because they were too busy cutting the crowd. But yeah, like, you get to see him running out, coming out of the smoke, like the whole, like his whole entrance without cutaways to the crowd. It's great.
It was beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, like, just, you know, his face when he came out of the steam, and you can see it just like written across his face of just like, he's trying to hold back tears. He never thought he was going to be back there. And there he is, you know, like, you watch that clip and like that is a man who is about to cry, and then he gets it back together and like he's just overwhelmed by it. And then he gets back into it and does the whole entrance and goes in and does the spear and they cut away. And so, yeah, that was a big moment. But yeah, a lot of people are saying this is like one of the best Rumbles ever, which I see the argument for. For me, I felt like the Brock stuff could have ended a couple entries sooner, in my opinion.
I personally kind of wanted it to go one or two more just to give him the overall record.
Yeah, they wanted to stop short of that, apparently. But yeah, it was like the last couple, I was just kind of like, oh, you know, I wanted to see. I mean, like, this, it worked. What they did worked because they had Brock beat the shit out of half the Rumble, throw them all out. And they had, you know, they built Drew McIntyre in that match, like, almost from nowhere, which they never do and rarely do well. It was just like, okay, we have Brock just throwing everybody out, pissing everybody off. You have Drew Mac come in there and be the one to knock him out of the Rumble, stare him down for several minutes afterward, which was great, and then go on to win the whole thing. Like, once he knocked out Brock, I was like, okay, well, Drew's probably not winning. Like, they'll just have Roman Reigns win and then do something else to build to Drew and Brock. But no, they went the whole way, which they never do, with a new guy. And it's great. It's refreshing and exciting and fun. And that was great. And Edge being back is great. Good stuff happened in that Rumble.
And then Monday night happened for Edge.
Yeah, he had a bad night. He didn't, not as, yeah.
Edge is back. He gives a passionate speech, and then Randy Orton comes out and shits all over everything.
Oh, Randall. Oh, Randall.
Randall Keith Orton is going to Randall Keith Orton.
Yeah, all over, I mean, Edge. That, yeah, that makes sense that if you have Edge coming back after, you know, however many years now, for his first match back, he's going to want to work with somebody who he has before, who knows what they're doing, to get back into the groove of things. And then he can go on to start, like, working down the list of dream matches with AJ Styles and Matt Riddle or whomever else, you know?
AJ Styles, I wonder how long he's going to be gone for.
Yeah, apparently, yeah, no word on that.
Separated shoulder?
Well, the question, yeah, separated shoulder. So if he needs surgery, it could be a while. If he doesn't need surgery, he should be back by Mania pretty easily. So
There were a lot of injuries this past weekend. Samoa Joe got knocked out on Raw.
Yeah. Alexander Wolf got knocked out. Yeah. AJ's friggin' thing there.
Beth Phoenix getting her head jammed into the fucking steel. Yeah.
That was great to watch.
Bleeding just like, through the entire Rumble match.
Yeah, just Bianca Belair's reaction, immediate reaction to that of just like, oh, shit. Wasn't her fault. It's just how it happened. But yeah, Bianca Belair also looking very good in the Rumble match.
Oh, yeah.
Setting a new record for eliminations, which was quickly matched by Shayna Baszler.
I was really bummed that Baszler didn't win it. I was hoping this was going to be her big year. And
yeah, well, you know, not to get into the weeds on the whatchamacallit, the dirt sheets, but apparently the plan is still Shayna versus Becky at Mania.
Yeah, and we're recording this during NXT, so we can't be watching it right now, but have you heard the rumblings of what's supposed to happen with NXT?
Nope. Don't tell me.
Okay.
NXT is what I actually watch.
Well, I'm not sure how into the dirt sheets you got, but
it's I don't go that deep.
Well, I won't ruin anything for you then.
Very good. Very good. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Anyway,
we should talk about a game, shouldn't we?
We should talk about a game. Yeah.
We got some reviews we got to take care of this episode. You got one to talk about.
Work to do.
Let us start things off with Pillars of Eternity 2 Deadfire Ultimate Edition, developed by Obsidian, published by Versus Evil, released January 28th on Xbox One and PS4 for $59.99. The god Ethos has awakened from his sleep, erupting from beneath your castle, killing your people and stealing a piece of your soul. Now only you and your companions can uncover the rogue god's machinations as he tramples over the Deadfire Archipelago. Tim, what does any of that mean?
I mean, I think it's pretty what it means is that this game really wants you to have played the first game before you dive into this one. Like, if we really want to get down to what all that means and kick this review off. This is a very direct sequel to the original Pillars of Eternity, which I have not played yet, unfortunately. It is on Game Pass, conveniently enough. So there, we've made an X amount of minutes into the episode before we said Game Pass. But the first one is available on Game Pass right now. But yeah, you fire up the game, and part of making your character, you can just straight up import your character and your save from the first one. Lacking that, you will make a new character, but you can also go through and customize what decisions were made in the first game. It gives you a few kind of boilerplate options of like, oh, you were like a very lawful, basically that I kind of shook down to like lawful good, chaotic good, evil and terrible and got everybody killed, like some neutral ones. there was like five kind of like overarching choices. Like if you didn't want to get into the weeds of that. Oh, and like, I think one of them was specifically like what ending you chose or like what deity you aligned with in the first game. Again, there's a lot of lore and a lot of stuff that I was kind of like, oh God. Okay. Just like trying to pick up as I go. So given the option, you should probably delve into the first one first if you haven't already. But if you have, what does Pillars of Eternity 2 have to offer you? And what does it have for someone who hasn't played the first one to look forward to after they're done with it? Good news, it's a good game. despite being pretty lost on not having played the first game, having not the context of like of all those decisions in the world and like characters showing up and me kind of being like, oh, it seems like that character recognizes me, am I supposed to know this guy, moments like that, it's still I still despite all that, still, kind of got into the groove of like, okay, well, I kind of get the gist of what happened to the first game. Like, I am the man, and this dude blew up my castle and is walking across this string of islands, and I got to chase after this dude. And so I inferred that, the first game did not take place in this exact same spot. It took place on a different portion of the world. So you are encountering new worlds and new situations, areas and situations than what was traversed in the first game. So Okay, here's a cool thing about this game. This game, more so than, and I have played a lot of these type of computer RPGs adapted to consoles in the last few months for this very show, going back to like Planescape Torment and Neverwinter Nights. I have played, not for this show, but I played Divinity, which is very similar to this game. And after seeing me play this game for like, I don't know, like 10 minutes, my wife was like interested in starting up Pillars 1 on the old Game Pass, which she did. This game seems like the most tailored for play on a console more than any of the other ones. Which is very good for the Xbox One version of this game. The biggest thing is, so all these games kind of follow this system where they, you give characters order and your combat kind of plays out in real time. And you can pause it at any point and issue orders to your characters or position them around or what have you. You can do all that stuff. That's kind of the familiar mode, and it's something that works, you know, I feel like it works better on PC when you just like tap in the space bar to pause, you click around on your guys, hit hotkeys, and you can issue orders and move things around and click on things a lot faster. This game has that still, and that is functional, but as, you know, I think when you have a party of five characters and numerous possible enemies in an encounter all running around doing shit and using skills, like sometimes that can be a bit unwieldy. What this game also has that its predecessor did not, and no other game that I've seen in this genre is not, is they have a straight up turn-based combat mode that you can flip on at the beginning of the game. And at that point, you have something that plays out a lot more friendly to playing on your couch with a controller on a TV. And I think is a lot more friendly just to people who are more familiar with your traditional like JRPG turn-based RPG. And yeah, that in that mode, it shows like the action list on the side. So, you know, in what order your characters are acting, it'll show you when you cast a spell, when that spell is going to go off. And you will, you know, a character's turn will come up. You can move them around the field. You have like an action, like a standard action you can take. There's other kind of free actions you can take depending on what abilities you have for that character. And you do a turn and then you end the turn and it goes on to the next person's turn. But that is I really want to go back and play Pillars of Eternity 1, but it makes me sad that this mode isn't going to be in it to play it on a console. This is something new for Pillars of Eternity 2, not even for the Ultimate Edition. It's something they released in the PC edition. It does have kind of an effect on how like certain skills work and how certain character classes work. I was just kind of like reading up on people discussing it, but you know, both ways are viable. Both modes kind of have their quirks that might make certain abilities stronger or weaker. But it makes the game super playable. And it's still like you can set it so that like when your character spots an enemy, then the game will pause. So you have a moment to sit there and think like, okay, well, like, what am I going to do? Do I just want to run away? You don't just like walk into battle and then you're there in battle. But in battle, if you've never played one of these things before, there can be a lot going on with positioning your characters, timing your spell casting, making use of your ability points. Your spells work on charges where you can... It actually seems like some abilities, but all spells work on a thing where like each encounter you can use the spell once. And then once that encounter is over and you get into another one, then it refreshes. There's some things that only refresh when you like rest at an inn. And there's some things that like, I was playing a monk and your monk will take wounds upon their person. And as they are wounded, they can spend wounds. This is so stupid. Just to say, you spend wounds to use your abilities. So like an ability might cost you two wounds to use, and you can, you know, orient your character like, oh, well, I want to take more wounds. I want wounds to accrue faster so I can use more abilities, or I want wounds to accrue slower so that I'm not being fucking wounded. you know, characters can get injured, which will be repaired after they, you know, rested an inn. There's traps in the world that you need to look out for. All of this is kind of built on a not specifically D&D, but definitely a tabletop kind of rule set where your character will be running checks against their different ability scores to see if they succeed or fail at things in combat or out of combat. So when you go to disable a trap, it does a check against your mechanic skill. There are, you know, speech checks. There are checks for, you know, using explosives, doing athletic feats, stuff like that. They all kind of have tabletop-esque checks against them. There are a, like all of these games, there is a daunting amount of character building options. You know, races, class, different classes, different skill trees. You can multi-class, which it says in big bold letters, hey, if you're new to this, don't multi-class. Just stick to one. just stick to one. Do the multi-class on your next playthrough, please. It's for your own good. You can roll up. The game will give you, like, as you go through your journey, you will pick up characters along the story, some of which are from the first game, I guess, if they lived. And if they died, then who knows what the hell happened. You shouldn't have let them die. You can also just roll characters at an inn, just build up your own custom characters if you don't want to use the story characters. You can respec at any inn. So you can change class if you need to. Something I do like in having played some of these in the past, I think it was specifically Divinity, like, I was irritated because, like, one of the first characters I picked up in that game was, like, the same class or same function as one of the characters I'd made at the beginning, and I was like, oh, that's poop. in this game, when you pick up a new character, you get the choice. You get some choices for what class you want them to be, which is really cool because I made my character a monk. And the first guy I got, I think I made something tanky. So I had my frontline set. So then when I was getting characters from there, it was kind of like, okay, well, I need more just ranged spellcasters. Like, I don't need a thief. I don't need another monk. I don't need another tanky barbarian. I'll take this weird spell class that this guy has. And then after a few battles, I was like, maybe I do need another tank. Maybe I need to go respect that guy. But that's something I really appreciate, is that they are flexible with when you're picking up these pre-made characters, like what they can be. I think that's a really nice feature. The game is very boat-based. It's a pirate game. It's a high seas game.
Yar.
Yeah, you don't have to be a pirate, but if you want to be. So yeah, you set out on your ship after this dude that, like, blew up your house and took a piece of your soul. Your ship is quickly wrecked upon an island, and that's kind of your starting area where you will go to a town. You meet the guy who runs it, who's kind of a dickhead. There's a few quests in that town. There's, you know, a character you can pick up. It's just, and there's the first inn is there. All the things you kind of need to start, like, getting along your way, and you have a short quest where you have to go to the other side of the island to do a thing and then come back. So you, on that kind of starting island, before your boat is repaired, you get into, like, okay, doing quests, meeting characters, just moving about. You get used to everything in that starting area. Drink.
So it's good at teaching you the mechanics.
It is. It makes its effort. There are tutorials will come at you fast and furious in this game, and it's a lot to absorb, but it does do a decent job of on-ramping you on that first island. Along with just kind of like the game takes place from an overhead perspective with you, like, moving your character about. But there's also moments where you will kind of do these, like, text adventure style encounters where you'll go to an area and, it'll describe, you know, what's going on, and you'll have choices you can make. Like, there's one where you're going through the woods and you hear something, and it's like, okay, well, do you want to walk towards it, walk away from it, try to be sneaky? And if you try to be sneaky, it does a stealth check. And then you fail that. Well, I failed that. I was not very sneaky. And then you go from there. There's one where I think I was trying to infiltrate a fortress, and you come up on this like wall, and you have to make a successful athletics check to climb up it. Stuff like that, just different choices, different, they're all cool stuff. And then once you get your ship repaired, then there's a whole ship management aspect to this game, which was, could have been explained better. One of the things, like when you get your ship, you get a quest to like go hire crew members. And when you hire crew members, there's just, I wish they'd, yeah. The ship management piece was not very well explained. Like, I knew I had to know stuff about it, so I went in there and I'm looking at it, but like, you need to assign, because there's jobs on your boat. There is, you know, helmsman, there's cook, medic, like boatswains, deckhands, all kinds of stuff. And different crew people you hire have different abilities, that different things that they are good at. And you need to assign them to these specific tiles in the lower right of like the ship menu. But like, I hired them all and it just tossed them all in there. So I didn't even know that they were on a grid, that they needed to be placed in jobs. I wish that they had had you like put these sailors like in your inventory, and then when you get on your ship, have you manually put them where they you want them to go, just to understand like how that works. Yeah. That would have been nice. You do have to, as part of that management, you know, along with keeping a crew, keeping your ship crewed, keeping people healthy. Like if someone gets injured, you want to take them off duty so they can be repaired. You need to repair your ship if it gets broken. You need to maintain a water and food supply for your crew. You need to maintain crew morale and not just give them shit to eat all the time. When you're out at sea, like you can get attacked by other ships. You know, you can upgrade your cannons and your armor and stuff like that. There's a lot going on with it. Like, it is no small part of the game is this ship faring aspect to it, but it's cool. I enjoy it, but yeah, it's there. But yeah, once you get off the island, like almost immediately, like a ship rolls up on you and you get like another quest off of that. And if you've explored the town, you have a few different places you can go among the islands, so you can start sailing around. That's basically when the game opens up. Once you get off that island, then you're gonna have a few options for places you can go and start adventuring and questing along your way. It's one of the best times I've had playing that type of game on a console. No, it's the best experience I've had playing that type of game on a console. Let's be clear here. just like that, they definitely made steps. And my wife, who was playing the first one, definitely like agreed that they took some steps to make the game more playable on console. The turn-based mode makes it, you know, takes care of the most difficult part of like playing one of those games on a console, really, and slows it down so you can manage it much easier with a controller. The game, you know, it looks good. You know, there is a lot of detail there, so sometimes you gotta like lean forward and squint. Most of the text is pretty readable. There are some low times that are a bit bad in some instances. The loads are decently long, and it's not really that troublesome in a lot of cases where, like, you know, you go into an area and it's like, okay, you're there, so it's going to be a while before your next load. But there's also an instance like the inn in that first town is two stories, and it loads when you go from one to the other and when you go in and out of the inn. So like, I went to this inn, I happened to go in on the second floor, and so the inn loads in, and there wasn't much I could do on the second floor. So I go downstairs, and the innkeeper's like, hey, I need you to go get these guys out of this room. They're just staying in the room. They're not leaving upstairs. Go kick them out. Don't kill them. So I'm like, okay, back upstairs, another loading screen, kick those guys out, back downstairs, another loading screen, leave the inn, another loading screen. There was like six freaking loading screens there. And that is the most extreme case, but boy, was that freaking annoying. But all the loads are probably like, I don't know, 15-ish, 10, 15 seconds. They're not short. And if there's a bunch of them close together, it can definitely get annoying. And the game has an absolutely lovely soundtrack. Reminds me a lot of Fable. the Fable games, just really great soundtrack and good. And I like all the voice acting on the characters too was also very well done, high quality stuff. But yeah, the soundtrack was just great. Like it's just very pleasant, very enjoyable to play. Sets a very good mood for the game of you know, exploring and adventuring and RPGing.
RPGing.
RPGing. Role play gaming.
Ripping.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it sounds like a whole lot of good in this game, so I gotta know, $60, what is your verdict?
Yeah, I think it's definitely worth it. The only sticky wicket is whether or not you've played the first one. That's really the thing, but I don't know. If you want to skip right to it, then more power to you, but, you know, Pillars of Eternity the first is on Game Pass to check out. And I think you'll definitely get the most out of the game if you have played the first one and you have that data to carry over. But it's a great console RPG. I mean, I guess if you haven't touched any of those games yet, it feels like there's been quite a few in recent years. There's been a bit of a resurgence in the genre, despite the fact that you might be a bit lost having not played the first one. From a gameplay perspective, it is a great one to play and a great one to get in on. So maybe even with that, what's out, you know, notwithstanding, like maybe you should still check this one out first if you haven't played any of them before, because that turn-based mode, man, that's the stuff right there.
The game changer.
It is a game changer for console side. Yeah, it's a great game.
Right. Sounds good.
I'm excited to go play the first one now.
Again, available on Game Pass.
Again, on Game Pass.
I like how we've turned you into a Game Pass convert now.
I mean, it's not hard. You subscribe to the thing, and then there's a bunch of games before you even finish the games you were playing. There's more games on there.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I just keep queuing things up, and then it's like, oh, fuck, now Plague Tale is on there. Like, I feel like every month when they update it, there is at least one thing that I'm like, oh, I want to play that, or I want to at least check it out like a little bit. You know, every month there's at least one game that I want to download, get installed and play. Just not enough hours, man.
Whew. Yeah. Oh, well, always good having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final words before we move on?
I don't. Let's just move on.
All right. Moving on. It is party time. Chris Taylor, Pernell Vaughn, you're both here. How are you two doing?
I'm doing good.
Ginger chewy.
You're doing ginger chewy.
That's right, because I'm eating a ginger chew. I've been chewing it since we started originally talking. This bad boy is still going. I got tons of chew left. I was not making this up, man. There's a particular flavor to calorie food consumption ratio going on here. I can dig this.
Hmm.
You know, because you think about it, usually we like candy, we like sweets, and none of that shit's healthy, and yet we find ourselves buying it by the bag, and you always end up pouring it in your mouth. You never eat one piece at a time. No one does that. You pour it in your mouth, and you just do the whole thing where you get like 50 Skittles in your mouth, and you crunch them all together, and you swallow it. It doesn't last very long. Calorie load is insane, though. The return is bad. You know, tastes good, but it's brief, and the calories explode. But these bad boys, oh, shit. I love them. I'm a fan. I'm pimping ginger chews like nobody's business. Pimping them.
Man, good stuff. Chris, Jeez. What are you up to?
I'm eating 50 Skittles.
And they're going.
Yeah. No, I can't just pop in all the Skittles in my mouth at the same time. There's green apple in there now.
Yeah, I miss lime.
Me too. Lime still exists. It's in the Skittles that are in the dark green bag in it. They're called Orchard. Orchard.
I thought you were about to say they exist, but only in Canada. So you got to do a country, got to do like an import export swap.
Yeah. And here's the thing, though. Like, what grows in an orchard? Friggin' apples. They should have put the green apple one in that bag.
Yeah, seriously.
The lime alone.
You know what? Yeah. They probably just tried to like recoup. Like, crap, people really miss this damn lime. What are we going to do? Well, we got this new bag coming out. Throw lime in there. People will buy it for that alone.
Yeah. It's actually a pretty good set, though. Like, they're actually pretty good. But they're hard to find. I only ever see them in, like, the occasional gas station, and I can never remember which one.
Well, I, yeah, gotta I don't say see that. Those often at all. I see the wild berry and the sour ones everywhere.
Yeah, nobody needs those.
No.
Hey, you watch your mouth. Wild berries are shit. Wild berries are shit.
Yeah, they came out when I was like 9 years old, though. Like, that's like the first, tropical one were the first like alternate bags of Skittles. So it's like I got just as tired of those as regular Skittles.
Oh, for sure. Don't get me wrong. I'm not disagreeing with the early mean I've had my fill of them, but they're still damn good. But
yeah,
have you had the yogurt Skittles yet?
I haven't had those. I want them.
I've been dodging them. Good. Happen. It's going to happen soon. I know it. Eventually, I'm going to crack. They look so damn tasty. But I always wonder too. Like we usually eat these candies, you know, and they always list the flavors on the bag. And I'm that guy who just shovels my mouth, so they all just kind of congeal in there. But I always come across people that are like, I hate that specific flavor. Like, I hate the raspberry ones out of a whole bag. And I seriously have yet to really come across a sugary candy that has a variety of flavors that has me going, this specific one and this bag of six is disgusting. I've never had that sensation. Never felt that way. It's all sugar, all good.
You're lucky then, because, man, I can't stand those green apple ones.
Like, as in they're gross, though?
I can't.
They're like, not lime. That's the problem.
It's not just that they're not lime. It's that they just aren't good. There's just this weird, like, they're going for, like, the tartness of, like, a green apple, but it's, like, it just tastes like this weird chemically thing where, I don't know, it's not sour enough to be sour and it's not sweet enough to be sweet. It's just this kind of bitter non-flavor.
On the positive, though, I can picture going to work with you every 2 weeks and just seeing a bowl of green Skittles up for grabs on the take me table.
There you go.
Like, that's right. That's my boy. That's Chris. Give him a candy fix.
Root Beer's My Jam says they hate anything watermelon flavored.
My brain is hurting right now. Green apple, watermelon, hatred for those things. Oh, mercy.
I like watermelon. I like watermelon a lot.
I am literally drinking watermelon sparkling water right now.
I like watermelon.
There's only one thing I think that I can think of that's like watermelon flavor that I don't like, and that's Jolly Ranchers. I don't like their watermelon flavor. It's too intense. Watermelon is not supposed to be that intense.
All Jolly Ranchers are intense.
You take one watermelon Jolly Rancher, and oh shit, shoot the curl. Get off.
But like a Jolly Rancher's cherry, for instance, it's just like cherry dialed up a little bit, but like the watermelon one, just, I don't know. Never liked them. Too jolly for liar.
Too jolly.
It's too jolly. Well, no, I got these scars.
Yeah.
Watermelon Jolly Rancher.
Root Beer likes watermelon, doesn't like artificial watermelon. That's the thing.
That I can understand. I'm like that with banana a lot of the time. I don't eat bananas, but I'm okay with banana flavored stuff. Same for coconut, actually.
Oh, banana Laffy Taffy? Oh, man.
Yeah, those are delicious.
Oh, I love banana Laffy Taffy.
Yeah, hand me an ass banana. Get that shit out of here. Don't want it. It's all gloppy and mess.
I'll tell you what.
Go ahead.
I was about to say is I like their health properties, but that's about it.
Speaking of the opposite of health properties, the candy that's been getting me lately, and maybe I'll have an opinion on this. Did you know that Butterfinger changed their thing slightly?
What, the recipe?
Yeah.
What did they change?
They did something to it. I don't know, but it is amazing now. Like, I just can't stop eating Butterfingers. They're like
situations where they print it right on the label, like new formula, new recipe.
Yeah, it says that's exactly what it is. Yeah. And I don't know. It's like, I guess they made them like maybe a little flakier, like more like a Fifth Avenue bar, which is like my favorite of the chocolate bars. But yeah, I don't know. There's something slightly different about them, and they're just completely delicious now. I never really like, because I loved Fifth Avenue. I always considered, you know, Butterfinger to be like kind of a, you know, well, if they don't have Fifth Avenue, they'll have Butterfinger. But now it's just like, well, I'm going to anywhere that sells candy. I better look for a Butterfinger now.
I have such a weird relationship with the Butterfinger bar. I've had this new formula, but I'm going to have to try it. Like, with Butterfingers, they are delicious candy bars. Uh-huh. But they are also the messiest damn candy bars. And they are horrible dental-wise. So,
oh, yeah, they still are.
No, they're terrible. It's like you end up taking a bar. It's like, okay, how could I just eat this entire bar in one bite so I don't get crumbs every damn where? Then I got to have a toothpick on hand immediately to clear out the refuse that gets left behind when the Butterfinger's consumed. I feel like they just did that as like a, they created it back in like the Middle Ages, like a booby trap for people just to fuck them over before going to the dentist. I don't freaking know.
Which is funny because like in the Middle Ages, they had neither dentists nor processed sugar.
That's what they want us to think.
We actually have, like, there's evidence that people actually had fantastic teeth back in those days. Whereas, you know, popularly, they're always portrayed with, like, bad teeth.
Mm.
But yeah, apparently people, like, just a couple, you know, a few hundred years ago had, like, no dental problems because there was no processed sugar.
I guess that makes sense because when you really lay it on the table, if you were just eating beef, or not beef, if you were just eating meat and vegetables and grain,
mm-hmm.
What is really there to give cavities as long as you keep, you know, floss basically to keep stuff from getting stuck in your teeth?
Yeah, I mean, and also some vitamin C so you don't get scurvy. I mean, obviously those people
had wrecked teeth. Scurvy. Like, God, I mean, timbers.
I first learned about scurvy through Illusion of Gaia.
Nice.
Oh yeah, because the kids got sick and on the Mew, on the, but it was the Mew level, wasn't it? The third set of levels.
Yeah.
Huh. One, I'm surprised you said that. Two, I'm surprised I agree with you, and I'm also surprised I also remember that. Fucking vampires.
Imagine pretty good.
Imagine getting scurvy nowadays. Be like, yar, me teeth have turned into Butterfingers.
If someone got scurvy, I think the doctor would laugh at them. Like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
You can get vitamin C in anything. I'm looking at a can of 4C right now.
It could happen, though. I mean, you know, sometimes people get really into, like, certain diets that neglect a certain, like, you know, thing.
The fuck you diet. What is it good for? Scurvy. I'm on that shit.
Scurvy.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
Pirate diet.
Pirate diet. I can see that. Probably the ultimate Halloween costume. I got to get in full character. 6 months. No vitamin C for me. If I get the shivers and the clinks, I'm on the point.
Oh, man.
Speaking of tooth problems, that is the reason Cole's not with us this week. She's having some tooth pain and... She asked if she could have the night off, so I said it would be a boys' club. Lord knows how good that went the last time it happened.
Well, we went from talking about candy to scurvy.
Yeah.
I think the secret is we all binged on episodes of Recess prior to this episode, so we came in knowing how groups of guys are supposed to act to be entertained.
I like Recess.
It was a great show.
You know what I liked about Recess? Is you remember the big kid who liked to sing opera?
Mm-hmm.
Like, or, you know, he had a, like, fantastic singing voice that his singing voice was supplied by Robert Goulet.
Whoa.
Really?
These are things I did not know.
Yeah, that was Robert Goulet. At least in the movie. I think also in the TV show, but I don't know. That just made me laugh because, you know, shortly before he died, Robert Goulet was starting to become, like, a big deal again.
Welcome to Recess. Yeah. Oh, man, that's... Yeah, talk about some wild, unexpected trivia to get tonight. Holy crap.
I just discovered that because I rented the Recess movie as a teenager and watched it and was just watching. I was like, I know that singing voice. And so when I was looking at the credits, it said, singing voice for, I forget the character's name, and it's Robert Goulet. I was like, oh, okay. Goulet.
We got to stall for time. Can you distract the teachers? Leave it to me. I don't know why, but for some reason, I really want to have sex with that kid, that voice. Like, oh my this God. Is not good. This is not where this movie was meant to go. Abort, abort.
Oh my God.
I mean, I didn't get that out of it personally, but sure.
I'm just saying, you got Robert Goulet coming out of the voice, mouth of like an elementary school kid. You got these teachers hanging around about to bust the kids who are doing this little wacky plot to get some kids' frisbee back. And you got this big kid walks out, starts singing like Robert Goulet. What are they going to do? They're going to lose their shit. They're going to get really confused. Why do I feel weird about this? I don't understand. Shut this kid up fast before we got problems.
Jesus.
Oh, my God. See, this is, we were all tired a couple minutes ago. What the hell happened?
I started talking about Candy and Recess and Robert Goulet and.
It's always Goulet. Robert Goulet. It's always him. It's always the problem.
Oh, my God. On that note, should we get to some reviews? We got a couple more games to talk about this episode. Should we dive into them?
Sure.
Julie Dealy.
All right, we're gonna start things off with a pair of new Sega Ages games. The first one is Sega Ages Fantasy Zone, developed by M2, published by Sega, released January 23rd on the Switch for $7.99. An interplanetary monetary system collapses as its funds are mysteriously funneled towards the construction of a fortress in the Fantasy Zone. It's up to Opa Opa to rescue the Fantasy Zone and find the culprit responsible. Chris, tell us about Sega Ages Fantasy Zone.
Sega Ages Fantasy Zone. Well, funny enough, in doing a little bit of light research, I found out that this isn't the first, well, I obviously knew that this wasn't the first time that Sega Ages handled Fantasy Zone, because they also came out with it on the 3DS, and also its sequel, which is eloquently titled Fantasy Zone 2, The Tears of Opa Opa. It's a wonderful like thing where like the game is like bright and colorful and cutesy and like everything like that. And then like you get to the end and it takes a sudden dramatic turn. And that's what I love about these old ass Sega games. I didn't give a crap about that. Okay. So Fantasy Zone, you know, just briefly for folks who don't know, it is a, it's one of the earlier shmups. It's actually from the mid-80s, I think 86, and it was kind of created in response to, you know, the when shoot 'em ups were becoming a big arcade thing. It was kind of, I heard from one source, it was meant to kind of try to take down Gradius, and like they did it by like trying to make it look, you know, to really stand out with the bright colors and things like that. But I'm not sure, that seems odd, because, you know, Konami themselves had already made Twin B by the time Fantasy Zone came out, and that's also a similarly crayon looking game. No. So who knows, but it came out at that time in Sega's existence where, you know, they hadn't created Sonic yet, so, you know, they were mostly an arcade like creator that, you know, were basically looking at everything everybody was doing, is like, how can we do it better? And so this one takes like the kind of the shoot 'em up style that was going around at the time, and they kind of added in a little bit of Defender, in that you fly around and you shoot things, but you can also turn the ship around and go the other direction. The whole level is just kind of on this infinite belt that, you know, you just circle around and defeat things. So this one, the point of every stage is to destroy enemy bases, which are actually indicated on the screen by some red dots. And so you know how many you have left to defeat. And then once you do, a boss shows up and you have to defeat it. And the boss, of course, is like the size of the screen, things like that. And they shoot lots and lots of bullets, which is great. And then the thing that I think Fantasy Zone more or less introduced into like the glut of, you know, old arcade shooters, is that occasionally a balloon will appear on screen that says shop. And if you fly into it, you are taken to a place where you could spend money, which is dropped by enemies that you can, you know, pick up off the ground. And you can actually spend that money on power-ups in order to get your, you know, ship to do more things. And they're on a timer, so you only have like a, you know, you could spend all your money on like a nicer main gun. You can boost the engine of the ship and all this other stuff. And then, you know, it just goes away after a while or after you get killed, which is often because this game is pretty hard. But yeah, like it's a really cool system. And, you know, after so many stages and so many bosses, you finally get to the end where there's this dramatic twist that is amazing. And I recommend everybody play this game to the end just to see it. And, you know, it actually does set up the sequel, which was a Master System exclusive for the longest time. And that brings me back around to the ports. Actually, Sega Ages has been porting Phantasy Zone since the Sega Saturn.
Really?
Yeah. I'm not sure if it was exactly handled by M2, but it was certainly, Phantasy Zone Sega Ages has appeared time and time again throughout the years. It was also on PlayStation 2, and of course the 3DS version, which added stereoscopic 3D. But this new Switch version, because Sega Ages just really likes to give you the absolute most for your port when they do these new ones, especially on the Switch, it now adds a few different things. So for one, of course, it's got the ubiquitous save and load system. So now you can make a save state in the game. It also has a round select, so you can select your stage, your starting stage, if you've already beaten it at any point during the game. And then they've added a couple of more modes that are unique to this version. So there's the one that the main one that I'm interested in is called Oopa Oopa mode. So Oopa Oopa is apparently the brother of Opa Opa. It's a it's a similar looking ship, but with a red windshield. It can move a lot faster. And the in Oopa Oopa mode, basically on the sides of the playing screen, because, you know, this is a 4-3 game, so it's always going to have a border or something unless you put it in stretch mode, which, you know, if you're a monster.
Yeah.
But in Oopa Oopa mode, you have to like have these things on the side. It basically allows you to access the shop instantly at any time, as long as you have the money to afford a power up. So if you want that ultra wide laser that costs $2,000, instead of waiting around for a shop balloon, you can now just, you know, push one of the shoulder buttons and go ahead and buy that thing and use it. So that makes it a much snappier game in that you could be constantly like purchasing and using power-ups, which the game does slow down in action long enough for you to be able to do that. It's not, but it's still a little stressful to do it in real time. But, you kind of get the hang of it. And the cool thing is that when you purchase those, it draws from an overall coin stock that you gather throughout the game, throughout multiple playthroughs. So it always saves the amount of coins that you get that you haven't spent yet, even in original mode. So as you're playing original mode, you can actually be earning money that will show up in Oopa Oopa mode that you can then use. And the other cool thing is that, you know, as soon as you start the game, they give you a bonus, quote unquote, of $100,000. And so, you know, you can like really play around with it and not have to worry about using all of your money up immediately. So that's a really cool little feature. And then they have a time attack mode, which is, you know, the game, but it, it puts it on all the default settings, so you can't change them. And then it just starts a timer and then uploads your best time to the server, where of course it has global ranking and things like that. And beyond that, it's just it's all the usual Sega Ages like quality of life stuff. It's now got a 4-level difficulty setting. You can raise the starting stock of characters to 5 or lower it to 1. You can put the game version to the Japanese version or the US version. And then there's 3 other options that unlock after you've gathered a certain amount of money, and I don't know what those are because I didn't do that. It's a lot of money. And and of course it's got the things like, you know, adding in scan lines and changing the wallpaper, blah blah blah. But overall the actual port of the game is perfect. It is exactly the arcade version, which has been ported so many times that I can confidently say that. which is nice. You know, I also own the Master System version, and it infamously did not have the radar on it, and it never explains what to do. So it's like you kind of have to just figure it out by yourself, and that's like how I got introduced to the game.
Oh, so, boy.
Really happy about this port and like the fact that it, you know, gives all this to you. And, but yeah.
Then overall for $8, what's your verdict?
Yeah, this is like the perfect version of this game. So if you have yet to pick up one of the many, many ports of Fantasy Zone, I mean, if it comes down to this one and the 3DS version, provided you want to play that, then the 3DS version has stereoscopic 3D and this one has all that stuff I just mentioned. I mean, it's a no-brainer. Absolutely buy this if you are interested in Fantasy Zone.
Awesome. The other Sega Ages game is Shinobi, again developed by M2, published by Sega, released January 23rd on the Switch for $7.99. Ninjutsu Master Joe Musashi returns in this classic side-scrolling platformer. Utilize shurikens, throwing knives, and more to defeat the enemy and free the hostages. Chris, tell us about Shinobi.
Shinobi. One of those Sega classics that you never really hear about much nowadays, and especially not the original game. It was, interestingly, originally, you know, it was on the Master System, of course, and it got ported over to the NES. I mean, Fantasy Zone did too, but that Shinobi was on the NES. That's actually the version I had. And it's also one of the, like, maybe five arcade games that I actually, there was an arcade cab local to me that I got to play. So I've actually played this in the arcade, so that's nice. But yeah, so this is the first, of course, in the Joe Musashi saga, which, you know, it's a tale that originally began as, you know, you are a ninja, there are these stages, you go in and save some children and beat some bosses, including a helicopter. You know, that gave way to sequels where you did everything from fighting Godzilla to fighting Spider-Man that turns into Batman to fighting ninjas not only in a surfing level, but also on horseback. So it's a wild series and it, you know, got its start here. So, yeah, it's basically it plays a lot like you'll absolutely recognize it as being like a Genesis game, even though the original never came out on Genesis. You have your big sprite guy and he's, you know, shoots shurikens endlessly, and you have two levels that you can jump onto. You have the lower level and the upper level. And it is basically like just fighting the swarms of enemies that appear on screen, whether they be other ninjas or dudes with guns, or sometimes Arnold Schwarzenegger with a bazooka of some kind. You know, you just walk up and kick him in the shin and he dies.
Nice.
They're very, very Schwarzenegger looking. I'm just, you know, saying. And then, you know, at the end of, you know, every time, basically there's a counter that shows how many kids are in that level. They're always the same. It's always a little boy in a pink ninja outfit. And, you know, if you rescue all of them, you can move on to the next stage. If you don't, then you cannot. So once you've saved all the children, moved on to the next stage, you know, do the whole thing over again until you get to the third stage, at the end of which there is a boss, which has a big glowing weak point on it. And, you know, you hit that and the boss will eventually die until you get to the what is it called? The ninja behind the scenes, I think, is what the title of the final boss is. And then you beat him and get the dumbest ending ever. But anyways, all this to say, this game is, of course, once again, perfectly recreated on the Sega Ages thing. And as with Fantasy Zone, it's all about the extra goodies. So the first thing that you'll notice when you go to play arcade mode is that it has a toggle that turns on what they call time reverse, which is, of course, the much contested, controversial rewind feature. However, this game has the best explanation of it, and I think that this should be what is used to, like, take down dudes like, you know, mid-level streamers who try to tell you if you beat a game with, you know, rewind that you're not really beating it. The description is, reversing time, the pinnacle of ninjutsu. Press the ZL and ZR during missions, and behold, time reverses.
Yay!
Yay! See, like, that's
magic.
That's how you do it. It's the pinnacle of ninjutsu, so why wouldn't you use it? So yes.
Before you do it though, just for effect.
No, it's a straight up rewind.
Oh.
But I like that they went with that. And again, that is a great feature for people who don't have the hours it takes to memorize whole stages to avoid getting hit once and dying.
Yeah.
because that's what will happen. This is an old Sega game, platformer. You know, you get hit once and you die. Unless you put it on Ages mode, which is a new mode exclusive to this version. So now in Ages mode, you can now take two hits and your weapons are permanently at the highest power level. So it takes, you know, half the amount of hits to take down enemies. And, fairly simple. You know, that's it. And it also has a round select where you can choose to... the stream cut out on me. where you can choose the stage.
The stream, I'm having issues with the stream. I figure we're just going to go ahead with the show. And if the stream works, it works. If it doesn't, whatever. We still have shit to talk about. So
Right on. Okay.
I blame Cole.
Okay. That sounds good. So yeah, with the rewind feature, with the Ages mode, like you definitely. Oh, and of course the usual save and load features that are typical of a Sega Ages thing. Plus, you get the four levels of difficulty. You get to choose the number of players, drop it down to two, raise it up to five if you like. You can actually also make it harder by making the enemy's bullets travel faster. Infamously, they have pretty floaty bullets that you can jump over. And, of course, you could toggle the stage select on or off. It now has a button that, normally, I think, in the originals, like, if you got close to an enemy and used a melee attack, instead of throwing a shuriken, it would use a melee attack. And while it still does that in this version, they actually added in a button that would just straight up do a melee attack. And apparently, it gets you a better score if you use it. So that's kind of cool.
Nice.
Yeah, just another little feature. Sound test and everything. And yeah, that's pretty much it for this one. It's just, like I said, it's the game, arcade perfect. It's got an easier, kind of not god mode, but just, as good as it's going to get mode, kind of like what Nintendo does with their stuff now with the SP versions. And yeah, the pinnacle of ninjutsu, time reverse.
Nice. So $8 on Sega Ages. Shinobi, what do you think?
I think absolutely, if you're interested in Shinobi, this is the version to get, naturally. And of course, you're going to want to also try Shinobi 3, which is available, I believe. I don't remember if it's available separately, but it's in the Sega Genesis collection, on that piece of software. So there's two of the Shinobis. I think for copyright reason, they're probably never going to re-release Revenge of Shinobi, which is the one that has Godzilla and Spider-Man and Batman and all those guys.
Yeah.
But oh well.
Ah, well. Sounds like two really good Sega Ages releases.
Oh, heck yeah.
Awesome. All right. Well, next game to talk about is called Music Racer, developed by Abstract Art, published by Sometimes You, released January 29th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $6.99. Music Racer is a musical arcade game where you get to race at full speed while dodging obstacles to the rhythm of the music. Purnell, tell us about Music Racer.
That's funny. I think you just kind of did. So Music Racer is basically a game where you end up choosing between a variety of different cars, which can be purchased with points earned through the courses, and 14 different landscapes, which can be purchased with money earned through the courses, and 23 songs, which are unlocked from the start. And that's it. You don't unlock that with points earned from the songs, from the courses. And you drive this car, or rather the car drives itself, and you maneuver it left to right across three lanes, collecting note bits that are the score for the game while, like you said, dodging obstacles. So there are a few different modes, but really they're all kind of just variations of the same thing. There's normal mode where when you pick a course, the game will go about the process of leading you down the track, and the notes pick are on the course and you pick them up as you go. And then there's usually pillars stuck in the middle of the track that you have to avoid hitting. And if you do, the game will kind of just like dock your combo, so to speak, which affects your score at the end of the level. And then from there, it's just running through the course until the song is over and you get the goods, which can allow you to get your score. There's cinematic mode where you don't control anything. It's just the music playing, and then the camera just kind of does stuff around the car, showing you the landscape that you chose and the car as it drives along the landscape. And for the record, before I say anything else, just to get it out of the way, the visuals in the game are very nice. They did a really good job of beautifying the environments, and it's very bright and flashy. Heck, they have an epilepsy warning at the beginning of the game. They're not messing around. They know what's going on. And then there's Zen mode, where it's pretty much the normal game, but they remove all the crashable obstacles. And then there's hard mode, where it's the normal game, but if you hit any obstacles, the game just ends and you're done. So this game on paper sounds pretty good as something you pay definitely for the price. But I do have one general complaint about it that is worth mentioning for folks who typically follow music games. And this will leave it for them to make that decision or that call. And that is, for me, when I play music games, typically, regardless of whether or not the notes make sounds when I collide with them or step on them or press them or any number of variations of hit music to beat games, I generally want to feel like what I'm hitting is directly proportionate to the beat or rhythm of the song. But for multiple tracks that I played on this game, I had a hard time really even feeling like I was collecting notes to the beat of the song. It just seemed like they were just kind of strewn about on the course, and then you collect them for points. So you're collecting notes, you're listening to good music as you're driving, as the car is driving, you're steering it, but I didn't feel like I was actually playing the music by getting those notes or collecting the bits or the notes to the beat of the song. I was just collecting notes.
Yeah.
And one other element worth pointing out is that the game does a really good job of having a track kind of spin and move and turn and swish. And it even has moments where the track will speed up depending on how well you're doing on the song. It'll just like get this like nice blur effect going, and the car will just shoot up the course. But the one downside to that styling is that the notes are at like pretty much hugging the track, right? Which is normally okay. But as the car is going up and down hills, up and down hills, sometimes, or a lot of the time, I'll say sometimes, the notes will be hard to see in order to collect them, because you'll be coming up on the crest of a hill and the note just happens to be just over the crest of the hill.
Yeah, so that's one of my gripes with the game, too. I'm glad you brought it up. I was going to say, a lot of times when you're going up and down, it's very hard to see where the notes are to hit them. And there will be times where I just miss a whole bunch of notes because the track doesn't show me where they are.
Mm-hmm. And while originally I was like, oh, whoa, I found a solution. You can pan the camera out to get a better view of the track. It still doesn't completely alleviate the problem, and you'll still come across moments where this happens, despite panning the camera out as far as it will allow it to go. I feel like they would have been better served by, rather than having the camera focus more so behind the car, maybe have it higher up off the ground and behind the car. That would have made it so it's possible to actually see further ahead, including over hills. But I guess at the same time, if that happened, maybe they felt as though that would have limited the effect of going over hills. I don't know. But or they could have it one of those things where, like, there's like a light beam that kind of shoots up slightly off the track so you can kind of see it coming. But there are definitely ways they could go about fixing that if they wanted to. But I'm going to wager they're not going to go that route, because this isn't like a $30 game or anything.
Yeah.
But I will say, as far as it goes, the music in the game, it's not licensed or anything. It's all like probably produced in-house, or they probably found folks who were like willing to let them use their music. I thought the music was fairly decent. I enjoyed listening to it as I played the game. I never really played a track because this music sucks.
I wish that there was an option to pick a random track.
I mean, like track as course or track as in music?
Music. Like instead of having to manually go through and pick a song. Because there's nothing really indicating which songs you've played and which ones you haven't played. It would be nice to just pick a random song so you're always playing something different.
And that's a good point, yeah, because since they don't actually have like a high score list or anything, which I'm glad you said that, because that's actually a issue that I have that I should have brought up and totally forgot. The other element to playing typically with music games is that you'll play songs over and over again for two reasons. One, because the music just sounds freaking good. Two, because you want to hit that high score. You want to beat your best score. And there's something to be said about being able to go through your song list and seeing what your biggest combo was or your highest score on that song was, just to say, I aced that one. I got a double S on that track. I'm clear. Or, I could do better than this. I'm going to repeat until I get it just right. And by not having that score tracking in the game, it removes that element of the style of gameplay from this particular game, which doesn't break the game, but I definitely would say that it does it a disservice. High score chasing in music games is almost prime component of the genre. But I don't know. But at the same time, as a casual, just I want to drive my car to some good music. Yeah, it's probably not something that's going to concern folks, but it is something worth mentioning in case you are a score chasing type.
Yeah, and there is something to point out. This was originally a PC game, and one of the big draws to the PC game was the fact that you could import your own music. Obviously, that's not something you could do on the console version, which is why it's preloaded with a handful of songs. I would love to see them find a way to expand the soundtrack or, you know, ways to add more music to the game. But I think at the $7 asking price, it's got a pretty solid track list there, and it's an enjoyable game, and I think it's worth checking out.
Oh yeah, like I definitely would give it at least a try. Like I don't know if I'd go as flat out buy it for the reasons I mentioned before, but I didn't come away from the game going, this is bad. I came away going, man, it could have been better with these things changed or added to it.
Yeah.
So I would go with a try for this.
It's a good time waster.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, next game to talk about is called Skellboy, developed by Umaki Games, published by Fabraz, released January 30th on the Switch for $20. Travel across Cubold and take full advantage of your resurrected skeletal body by swapping out body parts and acquiring new abilities during your adventures. Chris, tell us about Skellboy.
All right, Skellboy. It was so close. No, I was really excited to play this one. So yeah, this is an adventure, an action adventure. I would hardly call it an RPG because it doesn't really have any growth element to it. It's that you swap out, you know, parts of your body for maybe stronger parts or maybe weaker or just that do different things. So I would just call that adventure more than anything. So it is how to describe the graphics. It's kind of almost looks voxely, but it's basically sprites on top of flat 3D images. So if like somebody drew a picture and put it on a box and called it 3D, like that's kind of what it is. Reminds me a whole lot of Paper Mario, actually, especially since it has a forced isometric view. And interestingly, no camera control. The camera just, you know, is fixed to a certain level, and just moves with you and stuff like that. The adventure plays out basically, it's kind of a comedy. So this, and interestingly, the game tells rather than shows you what the story is. Somebody actually just comes out and tells you what the story is, via a letter that they receive from the king, who says everybody has to take shelter now because the court wizard or some evil guy, something like that, got friend zoned or something, turned down for a date from the princess. And so he went evil and, you know, started raising the dead. And now the dead, you know, zombies are everywhere and everybody should just hide until it gets better. and that's all. And then the letter, you know, the letter reader is chased off by a zombie and, you know, you run into him later. But in this evil wizard's machinations, he accidentally also revives a legendary hero who is your character, who I found out is like, because it never really says what your name is. Apparently it's Skippy. So Skippy, okay. The ancient hero. Yeah. I would have thought Skelly or something like, or maybe Skellboy, but no, that's just the title of the game. Anyways, Skippy is a skeleton who, you know, is revived in front of the castle theater and immediately finds the beginning weapon, which is a cardboard sword And, you know, zombies set upon you immediately and you start hacking them to death. And then you soon realize, as you're hacking zombies apart, you could just replace your head with a zombie's head. And that's like your new head. And then, interestingly, the body parts that you replace and then set down don't actually disappear. So if you end up later where you're like, man, I really miss that skull that I had originally, you can actually just travel right back to where you dropped it and go pick it up again.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's actually really cool. And, but you know, like I said, certain parts are good, certain parts are bad. Like for instance, if you decide to put a zombie part on yourself, it will be basically the same as your default, except you lose a point of health per, like you have less of a health stock. It removes one of those, which I'm like, well, okay, that works for if somebody wants to really challenge themselves in this game, they can turn into a full on zombie, like replace all their parts with zombie parts and take only one hit and then die. I was like, I'm into that. And then I actually found this really interesting one. So early on, you run across a knight, and all the knights, you know, they look the same. They're just armored dudes with like covered helmets and things like that. Closed helmets, I mean. And he's in a guillotine and he's like, this is the worst. Oh, and I suppose you're here to kill me now. And, you know, all this stuff. He's, well, for some reason, all of the characters that are human still and anybody involved with the kingdom, they use the word dice a lot, almost like a Smurf would. So it's not like a pun. Like, they don't do dice puns. It's more like they just drop the word dice into their sentences. And I don't really get it. Except there is a one character is named Cower Dice because he's a scaredy cat.
Anyways, I get
yeah,
it.
I know. So anyways, you run into this guy in the guillotine. He's like, hey, will you help me or what? And then you have the option to help him out of the guillotine or kill him. If you help him, then he thanks you and goes away. If you kill him, you can use his head that gets chopped off the guillotine, and it's actually a super good helmet. it gives you like 3 more points of life, and it's like a really great boost for the beginning of the game. And the only description of the head when you have it, it's like general helmet or something like that. And it just says still dripping. So that's the kind of game this is. And yeah, basically you just wander around until you find, you know, the next place where you can go. It's fairly linear. It's actually not really, even though all the worlds are interlinked, they're not really that open. You just pretty much explore until you find something, some more enemies to kill, and then, you know, you're on the right path again. And then there's occasionally bosses, which, you know, I'll get to the bosses in a minute, but you know, once you defeat when you defeat the first boss, there's one spot in the swamp, which is, you know, one of the first levels you get to right after the castle. And you find a princess's ball gown in there and put it on, and it gives you a little bit of a bonus. So, you know, of course, you want to put it on. And then when you defeat the first boss, it drops the princess's wig, which also has a bonus. So you put it on. And then that actually gets you, that makes everybody mistaken you for the princess that's been kidnapped. And they let you into the castle, and that starts the next stage. So that's kind of amazing because you're a skeleton or you have a zombie face, or you might have the face of a plant that shoots rocks. Called a dead beet, B-E-E-T. Yeah, it's great. And anyways, so you also find interesting other weapons. Like you have a sword type, of course, which you can upgrade later fairly soon into the next area. You also get a spear, which is initially a pencil. That the cool thing about them is that you can do a charge attack with them. Like if you hold down the button where it actually throws them, and then you have to go and pick them up again. So, you know, it's like it's a good thing to like kind of throw a spear in there and then, you know, launch in with your sword and finish them off and then pick up the spear. And, you know, it makes for some good stuff. And then you can get a club item, which actually bashes like really effectively, which is fairly nice. And yeah, like basically you just go through this super colorful world with this interesting interface. The art style is fantastic. I really, really like it. Everything looks pretty. It's, you know, even though I'm confused as to what to call it, like I said, it kind of gives you a Paper Mario vibe, maybe crossed with a little bit of Zelda. I don't know. Music is interesting. It very much, it sounds like some of like Commodore 64 stuff, definitely in that Euro style of like 8-bit. And like every track to me sounds like just a demented circus song, which, you know, you might like or not like. But yeah, and then, like I said, you just go through the stages and, you know, fight the bosses and hopefully at the end of it, rescue a princess. So those are all the good things. And now, if I may, I'd like to touch on some of the bad things.
Let's hear them.
Okay. So for one, as pretty as this game is to look at, as soon as you start moving, you'll notice it crawls. It does not have like the kind of frame rate that you would expect from an HD game. And it really doesn't seem to be by design. It just seems like the game just can't handle itself. Things go down to like, you know, definitely sub 30 frames a second at points. And it doesn't so much get overwhelmed by enemies or anything. It just has this kind of constant crawl to it. And, you know, for a $20 game, I would expect better. Now, of course, I noticed from the credits this game was made by like three people. So I can't exactly fault it for that. But I will say that that was the first and most persistent thing that I noticed and was not pleased with, was just how slow the game is to move. Like, if it moved faster, I would actually just disavow any other criticisms I have of the game and just say it's great and pick it up. The other thing is that so the choice to make it forced isometric and an action game, you know, because there's a reason why Paper Mario is an RPG and not an action game. It's because doing this sort of style of graphic makes it really hard to make a proper action game. When you're facing different directions, it doesn't really change your position at all, and you are never going to be, you're never quite sure what direction your sword's going to swing in or what direction your pencil's going to poke in when you're like moving around. And since enemies are coming at you persistently from all sides, you need to know that stuff. Yeah. So it in eschewing a top-down view but not accommodating it with, you know, maybe more generous hitboxes for your weapons or something like that, it often became that I would die just from the fact that I didn't know where I was facing. And there's no transparency whatsoever. If you're behind a tree, that's all you're going to see is that tree. And that does happen. The first boss was where I really felt like this was a limitation of the game and not a feature, because the boss is like a really cool boss. It's a, you know, this big blobby thing, like kind of a blob puppy that comes out of the swamp. And it's got these giant, like, stocky eyeballs on top of it and a platform on its back. And so, you know, obviously you're supposed to, like, let it charge at you. And then when it's stunned, you jump on that platform and hit it on the back of the head and remove some of the eye stalks. You know, typical boss move. But the thing is, you can't see the platform depending on where the creature is. It's always facing towards you, so the platform is always half obscured. So a lot of it is having to jump onto the back of it, again, moving at like 22 frames a second, trying to get onto that platform and chop the enemy on the back of the head. Like, more often than not, I died because I just couldn't do the jump. Like, I had all the clearance in the world. I would try to do the jump and then, you know, get knocked off because the enemy got back up, you know, and did something else to damage me that I couldn't avoid because I was moving so slow. And so, you know, it even though I eventually got it, I didn't feel very good about it. So I was kind of like, if this game moved faster, this would be more forgivable. But since it's so slow, it's really making this, you know, kind of a slog.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've really not felt this conflicted about a game recently, because, like, I really love everything about this game except this one thing, but it's kind of a big thing.
Yeah, the overall performance.
Yeah, the overall performance of it is just like kind of holding it back. And since I have to judge it at the same price point as something like, you know, Celeste or, you know, what is it? Like, I'm trying to think of other $20 games. Like, most of the really awesome, like, indie games are like $20. And, you know, I'm having to rate it at that level, and I'm thinking, ugh, you know, it's kind of being held back by itself.
Yeah. Well, at that $20 price tag, what is your verdict?
I'm going to put this at a try it, and I'm going to slice it right down the middle and say that it is a beautiful, wonderful game that is funny and, I think, There was a lot of effort made to make it like original in its form. Even though there's not a lot of features, it's largely just action and jump puzzles, which, you know, I didn't really give myself time to complain about, but, you know, they weren't that bad. Anyways, you know, it's like everything that I would totally enjoy out of a game like this. And of course the chance to play as a skeleton is always a good game. And it's just, it's hindered by the fact that I think maybe the programming was ambitious or something. Maybe it could use more playtesting or something. I don't know. I don't make games, so I can't say. All I can say is that it was slow, and that did drag the experience down quite a lot. So I'm going to give it a solid try it.
All right. And something to point out is that this is a game that we're covering pre-release. There is a chance that a day one patch could hit and fix this issue completely. If there is a day one patch and it alters the game significantly in any way, we'll be sure to update you and give you the scoop.
Yeah, I would love to see this game like just fix that one thing and become a great game that I would heartily recommend to everybody. Just like Oniken and Odalis, like from last year or 2 years ago, you know, they had those controller issues, and as soon as they fixed them, those games were perfect. And then those guys went on to make Blazing Chrome, which is like a huge hit.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, they're so close. Just fix this one thing, get it patched, and this will be a great game that I will absolutely recommend.
Awesome. Well, we got one final game to talk about tonight that is called Killer Chambers, developed and published by Village Bench. It released April 5th of last year on Steam for $4.99. Help Brave Lord survive the Killer Chambers and defeat the bosses summoned by Lord Grave. Quick reflexes and good memory are the keys to success in this unforgiving action platformer. Can you clear all five floors and get the King's Crown? Pernell, how well did you do?
Awesomely bad. But don't let that make you believe that this game is bad, because honestly, I would have to go with quite the contrary. And I love when I review games that don't really quite seem like they will do that thing, but then they do that thing, and I'm happy that they exist, because this game did that. So what is that thing? Well, quite frankly, it existed to be fun. Yet, to get to that fun, you have to be willing to accept coming in that you're going to get your ass handed to you multiple times. Because the way this game breaks down as far as, like, you know, gameplay loop goes is that you are a character who walks into a castle to claim the crown, like you mentioned, and you are being accosted. I always get that word off of it. But accosted by a particularly jerky ghost who has set traps all throughout the castle intent on killing anyone who comes for said crown. But for whatever reason, your main character is immortal. When he dies, he comes right back. And the ghost both likes and loathes that aspect of him. Which means that as a game, you are going from room to room, dodging traps, dying, coming back to do the trap loop over again, wash, rinse, repeat until you succeed. So each particular room on a floor in this castle is generally fairly small, borderline claustrophobic. And it's usually something along the lines like the arrow volleys or, I don't know, like things that can crush you, things of that nature that will move in various patterns. And the game requires you to either outrun them, like say, like, you know, move over across the room, jump over them, or do a weird crouch jump where you duck, which is another way to dodge them, of course. And then you jump while you duck so that you kind of, you jump off the ground, but you're not as tall as you would be otherwise. And there's a number of moments where they screw you royally with that. But due to the way that the game hits you with the attack patterns or the, you know, trap patterns, you will find yourself in situations where it's like, crap, I could have got that, but I wasn't fast enough, or my reflexes weren't good enough. And you're going to die a lot. But similar to how thin games like Super Meat Boy did it, your respawn time happens so quickly that you honestly kind of won't care. You'll just want to one more time it until you succeed. And when you finish a room, you acquire a key, which will allow you to enter the next room. So on and so forth until you reach the boss on the floor, which I'll explain shortly. If you decide you want to go back to a room, however, you can redo the room with two other goals. One being to get coins, which can be used to buy items that can help you in rooms, or diamonds, which can be used to purchase special ability hats. that do things to just protect your head from attacks that come from the ceiling, or straight up clean one hit invincibility sort of things. But to get those rewards and get through those alternate goals, it's going to cost you a lot more effort, because usually when you go for the coins, you're going to get a new trap pattern that may be a little tougher to surmise and accomplish. And typically when you go for the hat currency, being the diamonds, you're going to get the traps coming at you very quickly. Like basically it'll be like one of the earlier patterns repeated, but very fast. And then at the very end of that pattern, they'll slap some new stuff on there just to screw with you. So you will find yourself thinking, got it. You know, run through the whole, like, you know, 20 seconds or whatever. And on the last 10, because each room is usually about 30 seconds or so, you'll get hit with a brand new volley of crap that you didn't learn because it's new, and you'll die and you'll drive yourself crazy. All this translates to you dying a lot. And they added one additional little weird thing to the game, which is that the ghost, upon learning that you are immortal, decides to curse your character with this weird thing where every time you die, there's a curse meter in the upper left corner of the screen that will tick up ever so slowly, but ever too quickly. And eventually, that meter will fill. When that happens, you will get trapped in a weird room that is surrounded with eyeballs, and you'll get it, and you have to survive and beat that room before you can actually progress with the rest of the game. Usually that room will involve you dodging lasers and eyeball bombs and weird blasts. It's more dodging, but the bullets are usually quicker and sometimes even harder than the pattern of the room you've been trying to get out of in the first place.
Jeez.
They don't fuck around. This game is rough, but it's fun. Even the bosses are fun. The bosses are typically characters or enemies that you can't attack because your character has no attack. So you have to do something while dodging to ultimately make them kill themselves. So it's a matter of just like basically doing the room while also having the added issue of the boss monster trying to hurt you too until he dies. And all this is fun, but the other aspect of the game that is surprisingly charming and enjoyable is the actual dialogue between the main character and the ghost. First and foremost, when the text comes up on the screen, it makes a sound that is very reminiscent from the Game Boy game Gargoyle's Quest, which immediately stuck out to me, which I'm surprised by because that game is old as shit.
And I love that game.
Yeah, it's great, right? And
yeah.
You remember like whenever the text would come across the screen, we were like being told you got another vial of whatever the hell the extra lives were. It was like, brruh, 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 like that weird sound. It's the exact same sound for the text in this game. It immediately resonated with me and I loved it. Probably the only person in the world is going to actually go, I love the text scrolling sound, but that's me. In addition to that, though, the dialogue is genuinely humorous. I found myself laughing at the lines of text as the character spoke them out on the screen. I always have a sweet spot for games that genuinely can invoke positive humor. This game pulled that off, thereby it gets that extra bit of spice that made it oh so nice. So in the end, this is a game that I feel like I can totally recommend, even if you're not so sure you're a massacre type person, which is usually what people call these kinds of games. I would still go with the buy because it does that thing where death comes quickly, repeats come quickly, and you'll just beat your head against the wall instinctively until you succeed because you're just having a good time.
Nice.
One might even say dungeony. That's not a word. That's
no,
a terrible
not at
word.
All. That's terrible for now. That wasn't good.
I lost it. I didn't know.
That wasn't good. So that wasn't good at all. You just ruined the show.
There we go. There's the text scroll. Everything's better now. Boozela or air horn.
All right. Well, that is it for this episode, guys. Thanks for being here, keeping me company. Always good having the two of you here.
Thanks for being here, so we could keep you company.
And hopefully Cole feels better, and she'll be back on the next episode, all raring and ready to go, and all that fun stuff. But thanks again to Tim for coming on, doing his review at the beginning of the show. Again, thanks to you two for being here. Does anyone have any final words to end the show?
Yeah, please come back, Cole. We missed Holler Talk.
Bye.